Well, the Warriors are re-airing classic games showcasing the rise of Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green. It's now through June 5th, and we're turning back the clock to bring you Warriors Archives, The Making of a Champion. It's presented by HPE, and it's live on Facebook. Go to Warriors.com for details. I'm Tim Roy for Warriors Sound, and to help us break down a game from December 6, 2014, the Warriors were at the United Center to take on the Chicago Bulls. Longtime NBA voice and the voice of the Chicago Bulls, and that is Chuck Swirsky. Chuck, you and yours, I hope that everybody in your world is safe as we get through this pandemic.
Tim, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Great to hear your voice. And yes, we're just following what the folks want us to do, and that's staying inside when we go for essentials, wearing the mask, and just be safe and be well.
Well, as we get to this game, Chuck, the Warriors came in 16-2, and lightning in a bottle almost. I mean, the Warriors have been good the previous 2 years, a good team, but not a great team. And now Draymond Green starting, and they get off to this tremendous start. The Bulls were 12-7 coming in, a veteran team, some really good players on this squad. But what were your thoughts early in that season? The Warriors were just starting a 5-year run of finals appearances, but what were your thoughts when you saw the Warriors get off to that great start that year?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is the maturation of the Golden State Warriors, and to see these young players really gel, the chemistry with Thompson and Curry. You know, you had the veteran in Bogut, you had a young pup like Draymond Green, and then you had the bench of Iguodala, Sean Livingston, Barbosa was on the club. Justin Holiday, one of my favorite people of all time in the NBA, just a wonderful man. So I think what this game typifies is what Golden State is about to accomplish on a run that was a beautiful thing to see as an NBA fan, even as a broadcaster, to see these players excel.
Well, Draymond gets off to a great start in the first quarter. He has 11 points. He hit three threes in the first quarter, which is unusual for Draymond. And in the second quarter, the Warriors win the quarter. Klay has a decent quarter. He had 13 points, and so they have a lead at halftime. You know, they're up 12, but here come the Bulls right back in the third quarter. And I remember that third quarter, Pau Gasol had 10 points, and he was a legendary Warrior killer. He always played well against Golden State. But the fact that the Bulls were right back in it, and Derrick Rose didn't score in the third quarter, that was remarkable.
Well, the fact that the Bulls scored 31 third-quarter points says it all, Tim. I mean, we're talking about a ball club that didn't labor offensively because it was a solid offensive club, but not like the Golden State Warriors. Tom Thibodeau, of course, relies on defense. And if you look at the Bulls' makeup that season, it was a pretty good starting lineup. I mean, when you start talking about, you mentioned Derrick Rose, you had Mike Dunleavy. You're very familiar, as Golden State fans are, with Dunleavy. Joakim Noah was in the middle, and he, too, was coming into his own as a terrific NBA player. Pau Gasol had joined the ball club as a free agent. And then you had Jimmy Butler, who's just getting better and better with every year. And then coming off the bench, you had Heinrich. You had Taj Gibson. You had Aaron Brooks, Nico Mirotic, Tony Snell. I mean, this was a really good Bulls basketball team. But on that particular night at the United Center, and Tim, you've been there many, many times, when Golden State comes through, there's a buzz in the building. And they had over 22,000. And I think in that third quarter, the fans really got into it.
They did, and it set up the fourth quarter. Draymond gets going. He has 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block. And to me, that kind of typifies Draymond. He gets a little bit of everything. He does a little bit of everything. He's a polarizing player, as we know. But, Chuck, what were the Bulls' thoughts on Draymond? What were people talking about Draymond Green at that time?
Well, let's talk a little about Draymond Green as a Spartan from Michigan State. I mean, it's not like people looked at Draymond Green as an afterthought. We knew what he could do as far as his accomplishments as a collegiate star in the Big Ten Conference Defensive Player of the Year. He was a really, really, really good college basketball player. His jersey, of course, is retired beneath Lancey. During that game, number one, he played a lot of minutes, Tim. If you have his minutes, he probably played, 40 or more?
He played 40 minutes and 59 seconds.
All right. So he played, 41 minutes. And he had, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, he had 7 threes.
7 of 13.
So I'm calling the game and I'm saying to myself, wow, where did this come from? But then you look at his stat line, and again, Jim, you've got the box score in front of you. I don't. But, I mean, he had a really all-around great game. And the three-ball shooting of Thompson and Curry on that particular night, they combined, and they did not shoot the ball particularly well from three-point range. Draymond Green was actually the best three-point shooter on the floor that night for both teams. And, you know, it was his game. And, you know, I think that's when Golden State kind of realized, hey, you know what, we got a pretty good player here. And you mentioned polarizing. I like to see Draymond Green. He's an agitator, and I say that in a professional respect way, because he can get under someone's skin, just like Dennis Rodman. I mean, we just saw The Last Dance. And for Bulls fans, they saw Dennis Rodman as a Piston and as a Bull, and they knew what he could do. And he loved an assignment every night. He would take to the floor with a challenge, and that was his vehicle to not only stay in the NBA, but drive it all the way to the bank with a big contract.
Well, Draymond finished with 7 boards, 3 assists, 4 steals, 3 blocks in that game. And just, I mean, just filling it up.
Let me ask you another question.
Sure.
Jim, Bogut killed the Bulls on the boards. How many rebounds did Andrew Bogut have in that game?
He had 12, and 7 of them were on the offensive glass.
Wow.
Yeah. They had a really good night. They had 15 offensive rebounds in that game. And, you know, when you give a team that's got firepower that many chances, it's going to be a long night. And it wasn't necessarily a long night for Chicago. This was a 10-point game. This was not a blowout. And, like I said, you guys had a good veteran squad there, and of course you had it with the backdrop of Tom Thibodeau's voice, you know, with you sitting there with Tom right in front of you barking out all those plays. That voice could cut through metal, I think.
Bark, you're very kind. But yeah, I mean, the fourth quarter, Tim, in that game, the Bulls did not play well. Golden State, you know, really got it done. The Bulls really struggled scoring. I give Golden State credit defensively. And, you know, it was one of those Bulls-Warriors games we've seen over the years. You never know what to expect, either in Chicago or in Northern California, of course, in Oakland, now in San Francisco. But, you know, I love this series with the Bulls and Warriors. And even, you know, we just had the loss of Jerry Sloan, Tim. And Bulls fans who followed the franchise in the mid-70s will never forget that series, Bulls-Warriors, where the Bulls just couldn't seal the deal because they thought that was their best opportunity to go to the finals in the mid-70s, but it was Golden State, as you know, who ultimately won the NBA championship. And, you know, these two franchises have had a great competitive series against one another over the decades.
Oh, no doubt. And that series very easily could have gone to Chicago. They had leads in Game 6 and Game 7 and could not, as you said, could not get it done. They might have been maybe one player short on that squad. But I think they would have done well in the finals that year against the Bullets. I thought the Warriors were peaking at the right time in 75. And I think Chicago with that, you know, Bob Love, Chet Walker, you know, how do you defend both those guys? I mean, that's just a and maybe, you know, pound for pound, the toughest backcourt ever to play in the NBA. Norm Van Leer and Jerry Sloan. Wow.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah.
I mean, think about being an opposing player and you're going up against the Bulls and you're saying to yourself, I've got to go up against Van Leer and Sloan. And you say to yourself, you know, I wonder if I can. They didn't have load management in those days.
No, there was no load management.
No load management. I'll tell you what, don't get me started. One day I had a chance to talk to a lot of players who played in that era, and they're saying load management. They said, look at our schedule. I mean, they are flying commercial. They're playing three games in three nights. Remember, Tim, we did that in the lockout year of 1999?
Right.
For like three or four times we had to play back-to-back-to-back. Well, and again, this was pre-expansion and then expansion where some of these clubs were playing in Baltimore one night, Cincinnati the next, and then they go to Detroit or New York. And you're saying to yourself, you know, they're getting in at 7, 8, 9 a.m. in the morning. They got a game, and then they're spending the night. They're doing it all again the next day in a different city. So, you know, I give a lot of respect to the players of yesteryear. I really do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. But hey, before I let you go, I have to ask you about The Last Dance and what was the impact of that series for Bulls fans? Because obviously, I mean, it was just tremendous, the footage they had and the insight you got out of all of that. But what was the talk around the town?
Well, number one, Tim, the ratings here in Chicago were off the charts. I mean, it was unbelievable, the TV ratings for The Last Dance, because people cannot get enough of Michael Jordan nor the six championships. And, you know, especially how the scenario played out with Jordan, the third pick. And I remember that draft because Rod Thorne, you know, the Bulls desperately needed a big man. And it would have been very intriguing to see two things. Number one, had the Bulls had the second pick in the draft, whether they would have gone for Sam Bowie. Now, the second thing, and Rod Thorne mentioned this in The Last Dance, had the Olympics been played, Tim, before the draft, had Michael Jordan, who was unbelievable during the Olympics in 84, had that draft taken place after the Olympics, oh my gosh, I think teams would have lined up with Portland, or maybe Portland would have felt so much pressure that you got to draft this guy, and somehow, some way, you got to make it work with him and Clyde Drexler. And so I'm looking at this thing as it played out, and when Jordan finally got help, and when Jerry Krause started putting this club together, they took off. But, you know, Tim, you've covered the NBA a long time. That Bulls-Pistons series that they magnified in The Last Dance, the borderline was just not competition. It was hatred. And those two teams could not stand each other. The players could not stand each other. And it carried over many, many times, obviously, on the floor. And I will give Pippen and Jordan a lot of credit, Tim, because when the chance came up to acquire Rodman from San Antonio, both Jordan and Pippen signed off on it. And that's how Rodman became a Bull. Had either player said no, that trade would not have been consummated for Will Perdue. And both players wanted to win, and they said, bring him in. We don't need to be his best friend, but we know he's going to play. He's going to play his tail off, and that's exactly what happened.
And the rest, as they say, is history, and boy... Just there, I don't think we're ever going to see another competitor like Michael Jordan. He's the most competitive person on the planet. And I think that's shown through in The Last Dance. Chuck, always a pleasure. And, you know, I could talk to you for hours about basketball and about life. I appreciate it. I hope you and yours stay safe. And thank you so much for helping us out.
Well, the same to you, Tim. And I know Golden State Warrior fans are thrilled to have this opportunity to relive some of the great moments in Golden State history, especially with you, Tim, because you're a future Hall of Famer in Springfield, Mass. One day, and Warrior fans are very, very fortunate to have you as the voice.
Well, I think your ticket might be punched there a lot quicker than mine, but I appreciate that. My thanks to the always gracious Chuck Swirsky, the voice of the Chicago Bulls. I'm Tim Roy, and the Warriors are re-airing classic games. The Rise of Stephen Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green now through June 5th. We're turning back the clock to bring you Warriors Archives, the making of a champion. It's presented by HPE. It's live on Facebook. Go to warriors.com for full details. I'm Tim Roy, and this is Warrior Sound.